It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could be here as we look at restorative justice, bringing together survivors and perpetrators for these facilitated conversations in healing and accountability. The Marquette Law School's Andrew Center for Restorative Justice recently named Mary Trigiano as its new director. We explore her new role, her goals for the center, efforts to reduce crime. Join in by calling with your questions about restorative justice, 800-642-1234. Mary Trigiano is Chief Judge for the Milwaukee County Circuit Court. Judge Trigiano, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Good morning. So Marquette has nearly two decades of history leading restorative justice coursework and clinics. And during this time, you've served as a judge in the Milwaukee area since 2004. What led you to this new position?
That's a great question. So, you know, I tell everybody being a judge, and in particular the chief judge over the last 2.5 years during the pandemic, has been an incredible honor. But really, being the director of the Andrews Center for Restorative Justice is a once-in-a-lifetime unique opportunity for me to use my passion for restorative justice, my trauma-informed care skills, my problem-solving skills to support and expand the already extraordinary work going on at Marquette University Law School, as well as the new Center for Restorative Justice.
Why are you so passionate about restorative justice? What do you see in it?
You know, I think it creates a different approach to dealing with crime and adversity that the justice system just can't accomplish. I believe that really justice-involved individuals and victims are not set up for success to heal and overcome challenges after a harm has been committed. And this restorative justice really focuses on the victim, but it also includes a path for offenders. And it embraces community support and help in figuring out how you can heal from crime and adversity. So I really think that it takes healing to the next step that the justice system can't quite get to.
There is, though, the critique of restorative justice that it's a model for liberal judges, that it's soft on crime, or it's feel-good justice. How do you respond to those critiques?
Yeah, I don't feel that restorative justice is any of those. In fact, it's another process and procedure that can run parallel to the justice system itself. It certainly, in some instances, could be a preventative model, but we're not taking away from the accountability that needs to be had in the justice system. We're creating a parallel and or supplement to the justice system that we believe can get victims, on a path to healing that, again, the justice system can't do. So it's not a replacement for the justice system, but it certainly is a tool, a set of principles and practices that can lead people to that healing process.
Are there particular offenses that you see that best suit the restorative justice model? Like, what about domestic violence or sexual offenses?
Yeah, I think those are difficult to have that process in place, but I don't think it is impossible. I think you have to have the right person leading the civil dialogue to address the particular conflict that has occurred. I think you have to have willing participants. So, restorative justice should be guided by the needs and the wants and the desires of the victim, because we're centering them and we're not sidelining them anymore. We're asking them to be a part of the process towards their healing. And so I think it is doable in many different kinds of situations. You just have to have the right process in place and the right persons to, guide that process.
We're talking about the role of restorative justice in Wisconsin's legal system with Mary Trigiano, who is the chief judge for the Milwaukee County Circuit Court, recently named director of Marquette Law School's Andrew Center for Restorative Justice. You can join in at 800-642-1234. As you have been this longtime advocate for restorative justice practices, how do you measure its effectiveness at reducing crime?
Yeah, so there's been many studies that indicate that it does reduce recidivism. I think because the focus is on the victim, there's a potential for healing of the victim. So I think that can be measured. I think victims allowed to express harm participate in the decision-making process of how that is going to be resolved. Mm-hmm. Lending community support to those victims, which we don't always do in the criminal justice system or the juvenile justice system, and reestablishing their sense of safety and well-being is really key to the positive outcomes for victims. On the same token, the potential for having offenders be accountable for their offense or the crime that they've committed by accepting responsibility and then taking it to the next step, which is actually participating in how that harm that they've perpetrated on somebody is going to be repaired, is really a unique aspect of restorative justice. Having offender say, "I did it. I see how it hurt you. Mm. I am sorry for that, and I will work for you to repair that harm," really is the piece, I think, that helps reduce recidivism and gives us good outcomes.
What about juveniles specifically? You mentioned children, and half of your time on the bench has been, you know, children's court. How has it worked there with children and this approach with restorative justice and reducing crime?
Yeah, I think it's been very, very positive. When I was first at Children's Court on my first rotation back in 2004, and towards the end of that, we were using victim offender panels. The district attorney's office was instrumental in putting those together as well. And you would have our youth who have committed first-time offenses be involved in victim offender panels. Sometimes you would have the actual victim there, and sometimes you would have just a group of community individuals that may be impacted as well by the crime that was committed. And guided by a professional, you would have a dialogue about the harm that had been committed. The storytelling piece, I think, is really important because it really gets people to think about not just "you damaged my property," right? But this is the ripple effect of the crime that has been committed. You not only damaged my property, but I couldn't keep my business open. I had to lay off individuals who had children and families to feed. And so that storytelling is really, really key to creating and building that community, but also having the offender, that youth, understand the far-reaching ramifications of their actions. And I think I was surprised quite often about how youth really engaged in that process and saw the harm that they committed and really wanted to try to make amends and repair that harm.
Mary Trigiano, Chief Judge for the Milwaukee County Circuit Court, with us directing the Andrew Center for Restorative Justice at Marquette University, recently named. Join our conversation, your questions about this approach to restoring victims and communities affected by crime and injustice, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore restorative justice in the criminal justice system, the work of rehabbing offenders through reconciliation with victims, through storytelling. Call in with your questions about ways to help survivors heal. 800-642-1234. Milwaukee County Circuit Court Chief Judge Mary Trigiano will direct Marquette Law School's Andrew Center for Restorative Justice starting next year and is with us. Let's bring on Tom in Burlington. Hi, Tom. What would you like to bring up?
Is there some kind of program where we can let the victims, the young victims, know that certain behavior is not acceptable, and perpetrators know that certain behavior is not acceptable? We have so many, a range of different things. If you're 18, you're now an adult, and you can't do things that you were doing when you were a teenager. And is there some way, if we could get it in our schools and explain to the victims, you know, this is not behavior, and you got to watch yourself, and the perpetrators too that don't know what the law is and what the particular behavior should be.
Tom, thank you. Judge Trigiano, how can this behavior be stopped earlier?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tom. And I think prevention is a great aspect of restorative justice practices, especially with our youth. I know that Milwaukee Public Schools and other schools across Milwaukee County have been using restorative justice principles and practices for the last 15 or more years. And so some of that is already going on, which is important. And the Andrews Center for Restorative Justice, while certainly focusing on the criminal justice system and the juvenile justice system, is happy to partner as well with some of that work going on in the community and address it. We've also, the judiciary in many ways has gone out to schools and have had some of these panel discussions and conversations with kids and youth about what crime is and, how to try to prevent some of that from going on by educating our youth in the system. So there's some of that going on. Certainly more could happen, and we're happy to partner with individuals to help do that.
I wonder, do you think restorative justice practices affect academic achievement?
You know, that's a great question. It's maybe something we will research as well. I think when kids have an outlet, a different way, sort of a different approach to dealing with adversity in the school, let's say bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And it is restorative where everyone can participate and tell their story of how they've been harmed, let's say by bullying or other things going on in the school. I think it can create a more peaceful atmosphere, a place where children have more of a sense of safety and well-being because their needs are being addressed through restorative justice practices. So I would say the answer to that would likely be yes.
Let's talk about the Darrell Brooks trial, sentenced to six consecutive life sentences plus 700 years for the Waukesha Christmas Parade tragedy. Can restorative justice practices help heal communities, help heal families after tragedies like this?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely a possibility. But again, the focus is not on the offender. The focus really is on the victim. It's victim-centered. And I do believe that centering victims is a public safety and a public health strategy. If people are willing to participate in various restorative justice practices, and guide that practice for themselves, I think healing can happen. It's not for everybody. It's a process that really has to be guided by a professional to address some of those relationships and facilitate problem solving. So I do think it's a possibility. Absolutely.
And by way of extension, in the sentencing, Judge Darrow made a lot of effort and took time to reinforce the victim's testimony and their healing processes. Do you see like a certain kind of restorative justice approach from the bench?
Yeah, I think absolutely the way we talk to people, what we say, what we do, and how we do it from the bench is extremely important in terms of victims feeling that they've been heard, that their well-being is an important part of the process and what we do as judges on the bench. And certainly, again, focusing on offenders, holding them accountable, but also being civil in our courts is really, really important in terms of moving people forward.
Let's talk about Judge Geske, former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Jeanine Geske. First exposed you to restorative justice practices in the early 2000s, Law School Center's current director. How has Justice Geske influenced restorative justice and your views on it?
Yeah, so Justice Geske has been an incredible mentor, and she has just really believed deeply in this restorative justice processes and principles. She calls it a philosophical framework. She, I think, has introduced restorative justice practices to countless individuals, both locally, statewide, and internationally. She is the perfect individual to create that professionally guided civil dialogue. She brings her skills, her deep listening, all of those things that I'm watching and learning. But she brings that to the table and has really expanded and grown restorative justice practices in so many ways. And so I'm watching her, I'm learning from her. I will certainly bring my own skills, my own relationships and collaborations to the table. I get to expand on what she's done. She's created that really good foundation, so I don't have to start by scratch, which is really a good thing. But I also then get to take over that role and teach, practice, and promote. I think the most exciting thing right now, too, is the clinical program that she's starting to grow at the Andrew Center for Restorative Justice, where we can actually take law students and bring them out into the community and have them be part of restorative justice circles or victim offender panels or creating their own restorative justice practices in their own lives. So I'm really excited about taking that up and expanding the things that she has done.
Mary Trigiano is chief judge for the Milwaukee County Circuit Court, recently named director of Marquette Law School's Andrew Center for Restorative Justice. Still time to talk about restorative justice practices, the approach, 800-642-1234. Where you are now, Milwaukee County Courts facing a backlog of criminal cases in the thousands. And in April, Milwaukee County reported it would take between 2 to 3 years to clear that backlog. Tell us about the concerns you have there and what progress is being made.
Yeah, great question. We are making significant progress. Even with the limited resources we have, I think by and large, we've resolved our criminal misdemeanor backlog in record time. So we're not focused on that anymore, and we can focus a lot of our attention on the felony backlog. The felony backlog is down to now under 1,600 cases. That, and I'm very proud of the fact that our judges and the lawyers and the staff and everyone has worked significantly hard day in and day out to get the backlog to where it is. Our backlog represents only 10%, maybe 11% of the statewide backlog. So we've done something right from the beginning. We have significant collaborations in place. So every time we hit a roadblock or a barrier, we're able to problem solve and brainstorm so that we can continue pushing forward to get that backlog down to what it was before the pandemic hit. So we're making good progress. Not saying it's not been difficult, and there has been a lot of barriers, especially staffing shortages amongst all the partner agencies. But everyone has really come to the table, rolled up their sleeves, and been able to problem solve what we need to do.
What is the cause of the staffing shortages?
Well, that's a really good question. And I think everyone is asking them, from big businesses to, you know, medical providers to educators. It's like, where are the people gone to, right? We're experiencing the same thing. We're seeing, though, however, a little bit of an uptick in our ability to hire individuals to come into the justice system. But the pandemic, I think, created a lot of troubles for people, and a lot of people retired. A lot of people moved on to different jobs. A lot of people just stopped working because they didn't want to be in harm's way with the pandemic. So I think there's a myriad of reasons. We're trying to crack all those nuts to make sure that we can successfully bring on individuals in the various agencies that support the courts and make the courts work so that we can move forward in a positive way.
Judge Trigiano, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Mary Trigiano is chief judge for the Milwaukee County Circuit Court. She was recently named director of Marquette University Law School's Andrew Center for Restorative Justice. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The holiday shopping season is a critical time for the survival of small businesses. And we get a snapshot on how the season is shaping up with two Wisconsin toy stores, one founded in the early 80s in Stevens Point, another in Delafield with a more recent history opening in 2018. Be part of our conversation about toys and local business with your questions, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Maria Luther owns the Smiley Barn Toy and Candy Store in Delafield. Maria, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. It's good to be here this morning.
Good morning. We also have Lindsay Giorgella with us, owns Geppetto's Workshop in Stevens Point. Lindsay, welcome to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, Lindsay, hi. Let's start with you. How are you feeling about the pace of sales this holiday season compared to past years?
It's feeling good. It's feeling really good. And it's been so nice to see everyone come out this year.
And Maria, how about you? How are you feeling about sales? I mean, this is a critical time.
Yeah, this is our Super Bowl. You know, you make it or you break it at the holiday season when you're a toy store. So we're really happy with how it's going so far. It's different from last year because last year people shopped earlier. So we're holding on and seeing how December will play out.
I wonder, do you get more browsing now, Lindsay, at this point in the pandemic? People more willing to come out to the stores and check it out?
We do. We have a lot of folks browsing, and folks have been browsing all through summer and fall and up until now.
What do you think is the secret to getting customers to come back again and again?
I'm always offering something different, something fun, something nostalgic, something that you can't find in other stores.
Maria, what do you think? How do you keep your customers coming back throughout the year?
Well, I would agree with Lindsay that a lot of it's the product. The specialty toy stores have items that you just don't see in big box stores. We also have the blessing of an incredible historic building that, you know, the Smiley Barn is over 100 years old. So the experience of just being in the space is just so joyful and amazing that helps us too. People just like that. And they love supporting small business, which is really important. And we're grateful to the community for that. And I do think that also brings people in.
Maria, what new toys are popular this year? What's driving sales?
You know, our biggest hit this year is this item called the Tony Box. It's a cube about as big as a toaster, but it's padded, and you put small hand-painted figurines on the top of it, and each one of those figurines will play stories or songs. And this toy is not brand new. We had it last year, but I think people are just discovering it, and it is our hottest seller right now.
What age is appropriate for it?
Anything from 2.5 all the way up until about 10, we found. And the figurines, the thought is that they might start making content in those figurines that can be appealing to kids even older than 10. Right now, the content is about the age range I specified, but, you know, we're hoping that this can, in the future, even, reach into the 11, 12-year-olds.
Lindsay, how about you? What new toys are standing out this season?
Oh, gosh. We've got so many things. Our Lorenz dolls, handmade from Spain, but one of our most popular toys is actually one that's been around for generations, and we have had it in this store for that long, which is our Brio wooden train sets.
Can you describe the train set?
Yeah, so these train sets are perfect for toddlers to about 6 years old, and kids can get creative. You can switch around your tracks and get all kinds of different fun pieces like cranes with magnetics, and you can set up this whole train set and whole Brio world.
You can keep adding on to it throughout the early years.
You can, and then every brand.
Speaking from experience a little bit there.
Yet every brand we carry here at Geppetto's all mixes and matches. So if you see some Hoppe train sets or some Melissa and Doug, those are all going to fit together with our Brio too.
With that said, Maria, I wonder, are there toys that you have stopped putting on shelves because either sales have dropped or another issue? What is not there?
Well, this year we've been very disappointed to not have lava lamps. And it's funny that that is a retro toy that we have sold really well. Kids love them. They're great for teens. But this year we've had some quality issues. Lava lamps, people don't know this, but if they freeze, if the lava freezes, it's never the same again, and it can't be fixed. And we found that a lot of what we were getting had somehow in some point in their transit frozen. Mm. And right now we've taken a pause because we don't want to have any of those, be sold in our store. So maybe in another year when they fix their issues, but that's one thing that's missing this year.
It makes me wonder how closely that you need to follow product recalls like, choking hazards or lead paint or other things like that.
We've been really fortunate, and we've been in business for 4 years, so I'd be interested in, Lindsay has a different view of this, but we have not had any of the products that we're selling had a recall. We're blessed that we have a whole ecosystem of small toy companies that I think are very rigorous on their testing and are very careful. So we have not had that.
Lindsay, how about you? I mean, what do you make of product recalls? How closely do you have to follow them?
Oh, I mean, you always have to like watch out for those sorts of things, but I agree. We really don't experience a whole lot of product recall. I think in the last year, we maybe had one product go on recall, mm-hmm. and we only had a few of those in our store. So it really doesn't happen too often. And that was the first time in years, actually, that we had had any products go on recall.
Lindsay, are there toys, though, that you have stopped stocking just because sales have dropped or because trends have changed?
One brand that we've stopped carrying as often is Melissa and Doug, and that is just because it has become available everywhere, and we are very specialty, so we have sought out some other things instead.
Oh, that's really interesting because it is true. You can find Melissa and Doug at basically any box store. It's that brand is everywhere.
And you'll still find some in our store, but the selection of Melissa and Doug is not as big as it once was. But instead, we've brought in a greater selection of other brands and other items. Lots of wooden things, just as Melissa and Doug is, but that you can't find other places.
We're talking with the owners of two Wisconsin toy stores about the holiday shopping season. Lindsay Giorgella owns Geppetto's Workshop in Stevens Point. Maria Luther here runs the Smiley Barn Toy and Candy Store in Delafield. You can join in on toy stores and toys, 800-642-1234. There is, Maria, this national push to increase education in science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM. Do you have favorite toys that are designed to, focus kids on STEM concepts?
Oh, my, yes. And that is something where I think the specialty toys really shine. When you go into the big box stores, the selection of kits, whether it's something to put together robots or to do construction and all of those learning toys, there's just so thin of a selection. And we have a nice big department where we have quite a few of those. And people come in because they can't find them anywhere else.
How about you, Lindsay, with STEM concepts and also, you know, trying to get girls more outside of the traditional types of toys?
Oh, yeah, we've got we've got a big science department in our store, and we've got a lot of our science labs are actually targeted towards girls. There's a lot of things that both boys and girls like our gumball making machine, but then there are also soap labs and bath bomb labs and so many fun things that really just both boys and girls enjoy, robotics and snap circuits.
Have you snap snark got that, check that one off the list. Have you seen you know, that type of marketing change over the years, I wonder, in terms of how they market and brand to children, and less, you know, pink and blue type concepts, if you will, Lindsay?
They do a little less of that. They still bring it out quite often, but yeah, you do see a lot less of the pink and blue concepts in marketing today, I think.
Maria, your store page lists favorite brands like Playmobil and Fat Brain Toys and Douglas. What makes a brand one of your favorites?
I like when they have play value, which is our lingo for longevity and play. The child just won't pick it up and be done with it in a day, but they're going to enjoy that toy for weeks and months and even years. And all of the three that you mentioned do have that. And of course, Douglas plush, they're just high quality. They're softer. They stay together better. They're more interesting designs. So we're looking for all of those things.
I wonder, do you think about the country of origin in the toys you stock and the brands you keep? And what about Made in America?
We love having toys that are made in America, and we do carry as many as we can. You know, unfortunately, there's limited production of toys in this country. So some of our toys do come from other places, Playmobil and Bruder trucks. They're German made. Some of the Douglas plush, it comes from Asia, not necessarily China, but other Asian countries, Vietnam and Taiwan and such. But we try as much as we can to get the U.S. made toys too.
Lindsay, what is your philosophy toward the origin of these toys that you stock, and do you pay attention to that?
Oh, yeah, we pay a lot of attention to that. We try to find toys that are from all over. We love European brands. We love something made in the United States. But she's correct in that there's not a ton of toys that you can find made here in the United States. But we do have a few great, great brands, such as Crazy Erin's Thinking Putty or pot holders that we carry, some puzzles.
So they're out there. You just have to really seek them out.
Yes.
Lindsay Giorgella with us owns Geppetto's Workshop, a toy store that has a long history in downtown Stevens Point. Maria Luther owns the Smiley Barn. That's an old-fashioned toy and candy store in Delafield. Join in with your questions about toy stores, questions about small businesses, and what to give the child on your list. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We check in on small businesses with perspective from toy store owners Maria Luther of the Smiley Barn, that big yellow barn with a huge smiley face in Delafield, long history, and Lindsay Giorgella of Geppetto's Workshop, a fixture for decades in downtown Stevens Point. Call in with your toy questions, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Maria, I've seen lots of TV ads for batteries this time of year, and the message is like, you know, bringing your toys to life. How do you feel about toys with batteries or screens versus toys that are not motorized?
We think it's better for kids to not have those screens and to not have the motorized components. And it allows their imagination to run more freely. And it has more play value. They seem to stick with it longer. Those electronic items, they seem so nifty for the child when they're in the store, but they lose interest after a couple of days. And for example, a stuffed animal, an animatronic stuffed animal, seems to have less sticking power than just your regular old-fashioned quality plush. So we don't stock very many of those, and I don't think most specialty store toy stores do.
Lindsay, what's your philosophy toward items with batteries?
We don't carry too many. We love old-fashioned toys. If we do carry something more electronic, it's going to be more educational, such as snap circuits and robotics that you build yourself, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, your stores include play areas where kids can enjoy some of the toys while the shopping happens. Why allow kids to play with toys in the store, Maria?
Oh, it helps them understand what are their favorites. We also love the fact that our store is just a gathering place. You know, we have very large play tables. The barn is spacious, so we have comfy chairs for parents to sit, sort of that Starbucks experience with the nice chairs. And they can come in. And I know it's funny. I'll see on the register, you know, somebody came in and bought a, you know, 40-cent candy. And I'll say to myself, you know, they were just, it's 13 below outside today. They were just trying to get their kids out of the house because nobody drives their car over to a store to buy a 40-cent candy. And we love that. We love that. We love being a part of the community and, yeah, providing that service of a place where you can just sit in a comfy chair and let your kid play for a while for free.
Lindsay, what is your approach with having kids handle and play with these toys?
Oh, I love what Maria just said, and I completely agree. And I also love that not only can kids play and have fun in our store, but parents can pick up the toy too and see the quality and see it outside of the box.
And it also is not something you can do when you are shopping online for a toy. You really can't get that same feeling. And I would imagine that that is also one advantage of a small retailer on Main Street is saying, come in and see how this toy really works.
Yes, exactly.
So Lindsay, you took over ownership of your toy store in 2020. What was an unexpected challenge that you ran into in owning and running Geppetto's Workshop?
Oh, gosh. You know what? It's actually been pretty smooth sailing. And the reason why is because the previous owner, Bonnie Brown, really took me under her wing. And I had been her manager for several years. And I was basically running this toy store already before I had taken over ownership.
So you had some really great mentorship before taking over ownership. It sounds like it was very seamless.
I did. Bonnie had been, she was the original owner, so she had owned the store for 40 years, and she taught me everything she knows.
Do you feel like you'll be in the business that long?
Yes, I really hope so. I absolutely love it, and it's wonderful here. I love the community, and I grew up here.
Putting you on the spot there. Maria, how about you? You know, have you had any unexpected challenges in a startup toy store in such a historic building?
Oh, yes. We were out of control the first 2 years. You know, I had no background in toys. None of the staff did. We were just winging it. You know, we made mistakes on how we configured our website. It took us a long time to even get a working online store. Although, you know, that's not a high priority for us. We like it when people come in. We didn't take people's phone numbers into our loyalty program. And so then we had trouble looking people up because we found that the names were too similar. All kinds of rookie errors we made. But now we're in our fifth Christmas, which is hard to believe, a little over 4 years in business, but we're hitting five Christmases and things are finally running smoothly.
It's interesting you talk about connecting with customers and having them in your database. And I'm wondering just how important is that type of information and analysis as you go forth in trying to grow your business?
Well, for us, we like to stay in touch with customers You know, we send an email every 4 to 6 weeks. We have free events in the store. And, you know, I'd be interested to hear if Lindsay does this too. A lot of specialty toy stores offer free events for the public. And this is a way for us to communicate that and also let people know about new hot toys, new things we've added into our collection. So we do find that very valuable.
Lindsay, do you do those types of events to get people in when they would otherwise maybe not come in?
Yes, we do. We've actually got Santa coming in on the 17th from 1 to 4 in our window.
There's a hot item.
Yes, and we do all kinds of things. We did something for Neighborhood Toy Store Day in November, and we have an email list as well, so you are welcome to sign up for that and get updated when we have events.
Lindsay Giorgella runs Geppetto's Workshop in Stevens Point. Maria Luther with us, owner of the Smiley Barn in Delafield, as we talk about toys and small business in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. Maria, what's your strategy for competing against the national corporate, you know, giants, the Walmart, the Amazon, the Target?
Well, it has to do with three things. I mean, product we have is different. The experience in our store is just fabulous. And people really gravitate towards it, especially since you don't find that very often now. It's all the big box experience to just walk in and to see something that's so different. And third, our staff. You know, we in the specialty toy industry, we know our stuff. And we're going to wander around and ask you if we can help you find that toy. And we're going to be knowledgeable about that. And you do not find that in most of the other places out there. So those three things really help us as small toy stores stand out. And we don't even try hard to play in that online space. We're not going to be successful, our business, in the online space. And we stick to our brick and mortar and make that just truly special.
So really that customer service element, brainstorming and problem solving with those customers in real time. You know, Lindsay, how about you in terms of Geppetto's Workshop? How do you approach customer service and when people are just going online for buying toys?
Oh, we love to help our customers. We get so much joy out of helping our customers find the perfect gift. I think we get almost just as excited as they do. But it's wonderful. And we're always here to help. We're always here to answer questions. Just as Maria said, we're very knowledgeable about our products, and we're here to help.
Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
It is our pleasure. My pleasure.
Lindsay Giorgella owns Geppetto's Workshop in Stevens Point. Maria Luther owns the Smiley Barn toy and candy store in Delafield, that big barn with a smile. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.